Okay. I'd love to hear you talk about the three sections of Chum Q if you wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I could probably speak for several hours on this. So what I'm going to share is by no means exhaustive. And by no means do I know all of it. I mean, that's the beauty of this Wing Chun system is if you study and explore and experiment, you're going to have some wisdom that's going to come to you that maybe I've missed. So I'm just going to sort of bring forth the ones that are maybe really most relevant, noticeable, or important for you to find your own kung fu. So in the first section, so Chum Q is broken into three sections. And so in the first section, one of the things you're going to notice is you're only shifting. So you are turning the horse, but you're not doing any stepping or kicking at this point. So again, we start things to incrementally become more and more dynamic slowly. So the first section, we're just learning how to shift. We're learning how to start to actually release energy through the structure of our hands without using so much brute muscle force. So again, in Silam Tao, which is a static horse stance, all we have is muscle to actually move the limbs, right? We're not turning or shifting or stepping to generate energy. So in Chum Q, one of the things you now have to let go of, one of the training wheels you need to take off of, is to not use arm muscle so much to make the techniques happen in your hands. That you have to connect that shifting energy that you generate from turning your body to then let that transmit right through to the shoulder, the elbow, the wrist, and then to release. And that the only muscles that you're going to be activating are the ones that add structure. So, for example, keep the shoulder, nicely snug in the socket and keep the elbow in or wherever the elbow needs to be, or change the hand or the wrist position to just be where it needs to be. So that's really the only time you're going to be using muscle in its highest ideal expression. But then you let the energy release through the arms. So when you do the double busao, one of the first sort of release movements, like that's coming from your dan xian. That the arms, as they release out forward, are very relaxed and loose, but there's structure in there that focuses that energy and power so that when you release it, it has a cleanness, it has a jing to it, and it would actually do its job quite easily. So then when we start to shift, we're moving into the lansaos, right? Going, shifting back and forth. And so here you're using these really big shifts to just start to learn how to generate power while staying and maintaining the stable structure within the Yi Qi Kim Yong Ma horse stance that you have in Silam Tao. And so we start to rotate on the heels. But it's not just, turning the body, from side to side. I mean, there's some very subtle biomechanics that we have to do, which is, we don't want to rise up and down out of our stance by, straightening the knees out when our shift, but we're pushing off of the floor from one of the heels to generate a little bit of power by pushing from the floor. And then as soon as we start to get that movement primed, we then laterally turn the hips, shoulders, and elbows all in one structured movement to accelerate and generate even more power. Right? But it doesn't start from you just turning your upper body and hips. It comes from the heel driving into the floor. But instead of extending the knee upwards, we then transmit that intent laterally by then connecting the heel to the knee, to the hip, to the shoulder, to the elbows in the Lansao turning and shifting. So it's all one structured movement, but there is a sequence starting from floor, even though it may look like one clean movement. Okay, it's very subtle in the at the higher end expression of it. The beginners, you might see them sort of extend the knee a little bit more as they try to push off the floor and shift their weight a little bit from left to right. Those are natural, normal things. But then when they feel the proper sequence, then they make it smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Okay, so this is one of the really important skills that you're trying to cultivate, right? As you play the form. Now, of course, these subtle things only come after we learn the basic movements, right? As with all the forms, you have to learn the structure and the precise movements properly first, and then you start exploring the form to get to the real gold within it. And as I said before, in Chum Q, it's about generating power, It's changing center line. It's coordinating hands and feet. All of those things. Excuse me. Let me just take a moment. You'll notice not just in Chump Q, but possibly especially in Chump Q, there's a lot of hand replacement.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the three palm strikes, the three covering the elbows and hand replacement on the Tan Saos. There's so much of that in that form and some of the other ones. So you have to remember that, you know, this isn't by accident. And that the threes, you know, at least as I understand it, is explained to me in sort of Chinese philosophy or ideology, the three is sort of a number of infinity. So, you know, when we do hand replacement, it means you're always replacing your hands in Wing Chun. As one goes forward, the other one always, always comes back. Just enough so that both hands don't get trapped, and that, you know, the metaphor here is that you always have another bullet in the chamber of a semi-automatic weapon. One fires off, the other one pops in. So you're always having something to have on center line for defense in case the first lead hand wasn't good enough. But then you also have something to actually fire offensively.
Yeah.
So your hands are always moving together. So two hands move as one motion. And so remember earlier I talked about these really good habits we have. Well, hand replacement is one of them. Anytime a hand moves, the other one is moving with equal speed, force, and intention. So that as one initiates movement, the other one does the same. And as the lead hand arrives, the second one arrives with the same intention, speed, and jing. And that, again, becomes an unconscious habit in your kung fu over time. So you never have to worry about your center line being defended or the ability for you to continuously run attacks from it. So, again, this is reinforced within the first section, all sections, actually, of Chum Q. Excuse me. Also, you'll notice in a couple of the movements, especially from the Go Bong Sao dropping down to the double tan. Now, when we first learn those movements, we sort of like do the Go Bong Sao, pause, you know, then, you know, drop the elbow down and then put the Tan Sao. But when you've learned that movement, then what you're doing is you're learning to how to release that energy by fully extending those Go Bong Saos, and by releasing and letting go. Naturally, if you do that, the elbow will just snap down and recoil without any effort. So again, this is an energetic expression of the art, that anytime you block or hit, when you've let go of the energy, it's gone. You have an empty sensing hand that then is also occupying and covering center line. Especially techniques that fully extend and then the elbow is locked out for that full extension for a moment. You have to have a habit that then allows your elbow to just snap down naturally to then cover the center line appropriately. Same principle goes with your punch, right? When beginners learn punching in Wing Chun, we fully extend the punch and lock the arm out and we hold it there. We're standing on salute for a while. Well, it's an artificial curriculum to learn how to punch for real. And so the first thing is if you're going to hit somebody, you have to learn how to fully extend that arm and really let go of the energy. So you train that over and over and over again. Yeah. So people don't sort of jam up their punches with short little movements without full extension. But then, you know, it's an artificial thing. I don't want to be standing out there with a locked out arm, holding it there for someone to grab, do a joint lock or whatever else. So later on, as we train more advanced, I'll fully extend that punch, but it'll naturally just drop the elbow down and recoil into a structured position that'll be sensitive, on center line, and ready to hit again.
Right.
So the transition from the Go Bong Sao to the Tan should also have that flavor. So again, that's a mnemonic. That when you fully extend any technique in Wing Chun, you have to come back to that natural, beautiful little bend in the elbow that we like, that natural recoil.
Yeah.
And then the two pieces of that are that it protects you. It makes it very difficult for someone to actually grab your hands when you extend them, because every time you hit, boom, it's retracting and pulling away, going back into the chamber. So your hands are disappearing every time after you hit.
Yeah.
Okay. What else might be in that first section that I can speak of? I'm just sort of visually going through the form here. Yeah, when we start shifting from the Lan Sao, Wu Sao position into the Quan Sao or Bong Sao with a guard hand position, you'll notice that our wrists go to what I would call that original line of attack that we had, where our shoulders and hips were square and Doyang. So if you're facing the mirror, you know, the wrist would go to that straight line place. But when we shift back, our shifting is just a little bit off of that original line. Now, obviously, my center line goes where my shift does. So the center line does change. But in the form, my wrists are going to maintain where the original center line was as if I was facing the mirror square. Okay. And what that is then telling you is that, you know, when I'm engaged with somebody with some energy and they're coming towards me and I need to shift to change the line, I can't bring my wrist to my new center line and leave that original line that that person is attacking on because I'm leaving it wide open. So I want to shift my structure and center line, but I want to keep my wrist on the original one until I can change with a new hand technique, replace, step in, square up, and then totally control that line. Now, for people who haven't, you know, trained this form, you're not going to have a clue of what I just said. And even some of you have been training it without a visual demonstration, it's going to be hard to understand. But again, it's something different than we do than when we're doing a drill where, you know, someone punches or if we shift, we always make sure that, you know, we keep everything lined up. Well, in the form, you know, the wrists are going to be on the original line of attack, even though I've changed my center line by shifting my hips and shoulders subtly. Okay. Because again, the practical application here is if I bring my wrist with my center line while engaged with somebody else, I'm leaving open that original line of attack and I'll get hit. Okay. So I don't know if that makes sense just from, you know, someone who's been exposed to the system a lot but hasn't played Chump Q yet or not. So I'm just sort of curious, you know, how that lands in terms of you hearing it.
Well, and I know we've done sort of drill. I've sort of done a drill where we step off and we're changing our center line, but we're staying at the old center line still with our hands. And it can seem confusing because it seems like then we have two center lines almost.
You stay on that first line of attack. Right, it's like you need to keep something there until you can fully change, square up, Doyang with hands, body, and feet to then, you know, redirect your attack onto them. Right, but if someone punches and when you want to shift the line and you move your hands out of the way, I mean, they're going to hit you.
Yeah.
Right. So you have some diminished structure behind that technique that's going to stop them, but there's still some structure there. Right. So ideal structure is when your wrist and center line are lined up perfectly. But in reality, it's like I got to leave my wrist where that attack is as I change my center line. But it's not like you're going to stand there for 5 seconds. Like you're going to change your center line very quickly, take a new line and do a hand replacement and step in and have everything lined up again when it's complete. So again, we're breaking down these things in micro skills or micro sections. And that's what this one piece in the first section of Chump Q helps you to do. But then also helps you to remember, as again another mnemonic, that, you know, if you're going to shift, make sure that you keep your wrists on that original line of attack.
Right.
Good. Okay. We talked about the pushing, the pulling, and the forward energy. So there's a lot of sort of the pulling energy that comes from the shifting to the Bong Cell back into the Lan Cell. Okay, so you're playing again with the pulling energy, that piece. Now, as we move into second section Chump Q, things become even a little bit more dynamic. So we now introduce the front kick and then the step. Sort of staff stance from Slim Tao. Really stepping, right, while maintaining balance, timing, sensitivity, structure, coordination, all those things. So that can, you know, that brings people like playing with that, but doing it with movement. So things become more challenging, more skillful. So we introduce the front kick in Silam Tao. So again, to be able to fully extend a kick while changing a center line, while then stepping down and maintaining hand and foot coordination. Again, there's some definition in terms of body intelligence going on here. And one of the things you'll notice is that in the first section, when we're just doing the shifting, your weight, you know, for the most part, stays about 50-50 on both legs. Because even though you're shifting, your structure is always squared up and in a static position towards an imaginary opponent or partner. Okay. But if I'm going to kick, I have to shift my weight towards the back leg so that when I kick, I'm not going to visually or energetically transmit any kind of signal to somebody that a kick is coming. I'm just going to be able to like to launch that front foot right to the center line without communicating it with any upper body movement or with any change of balance going forwards or backwards. And if someone actually had their hands on me, they would feel, oh, Jim's bringing his weight to the back leg and he's actually going to get ready to kick. So it's sort of like, you know, it's going to be energetically and visibly invisible with the rest of my body. The only thing that's going to move is the kick. So when we get into the stance to deliver the kick, we shift our weight to the back leg. So that's different than when we're in the first section where we keep the weight more or less 50-50 on each leg. Now, the other thing that we have to know is that this is a form. And in Wing Chun, in terms of, you know, the most ideal conservative expression of the art is because kicks diminish our balance because we're lifting one leg off the ground, I don't want to do those gratuitously. I will use a kick when I have to or when I'm put in a position that I have to. So what that means is if I'm engaged in a bit of a grappling or tussle or, you know, a push or whatever else, and then someone will push my whole structure onto the back leg, that frees the front leg to actually fly and kick right away. So in the form, I don't have someone pushing me onto the back leg. So in the form, we do this intentionally as if somebody did push us onto the back leg. So that when we do this mindfully over and over again, you're going to have, this kinesthetic mnemonic that anytime your weight goes to the back leg, that kick should be running to center line. Just as an unconscious habit, because someone is basically trying to take away your balance.
Right.
Okay. So just a reminder about that. And because even though we're pushed onto the back leg, we're still keeping our forward energy, our Cheng Chi, sticking forward. So when I do kick, it's only going to be when I have someone else's body to stabilize against, not by leaning into, but by pushing my forward energy from my Dan Xian and sticking to their structure. So their body then becomes the stabilizing leg that I've lost as I kick. So on a felt sense, I still have two legs on the ground. One is my back leg. The other one is the other person's body who's pushing into me. I'm stabilizing myself against that pressure. And then I've got this free leg to actually kick. So we want to train that felt sense of being on the back leg is the cue to run the kick right away.
So is that sort of in Chum Q doing the kicks without having that stabilizing force, kind of again, an example of the range of the full range of movement. Like you wouldn't kick on your own, but if you had something that pushed you back, that's training it so that's the absolute zero point at which you would kick or something.
Yes. And again, you know, you'll have different practitioners or teachers who may say, well, I'll kick when I want to kick, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Again, I try to be as pure as I can in terms of the middle of the bell curve of all the teachings of Wing Chun. So if I kick, even though I will train lots of balance and all kinds of other things on one-legged drills, I am not as stable or as balanced or as relaxed or anything else on one leg than when I am on two. So for me, it's risky for me to intend to actually throw a kick out there unless I've got contact with someone else's body to stabilize or at least feel something of what might be coming towards me with my leg.
Okay.
And then we also start to do the stepping and the kicking in the second section. So you're then learning how to move laterally, you shift, and you're kicking. So again, the dynamism within the movements becomes more complex and more integrated, always including coordinating hands and feet as we're shifting, stepping, kicking, and moving. really playing the balance, and then finding center line. So again, you can see how this form really starts to help integrate the theories, the principles, and the attributes in a repetitious set of movements, some of which will have direct martial self-defense application, and others are just giving your hands and feet something to do, right? Of course, there will be all Wing Chun techniques that will have some sort of application under certain circumstances, but not necessarily in the way that they are choreographed or sequenced in the form. Okay, it's a form. It's a tool to help you. It's not something to be a slave to. Okay.
Yeah.
Any questions on second section?
I don't think so right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. And then third section, right? We start really, again, moving bigger steps, coordinating hands with the Dai Bong Saos and the Tan Saos, moving forward, learning how to step backwards, learning how to turn and face somebody as if we've been pushed. I mean, there's some more specific direct applications that you could use from the form. But again, the dynamism just increases in terms of changing the center line with bigger movements, with coordinated hands and feet, on and on and on. And so again, the kick is also continue to be used, but we also now introduce the side kick. And so we introduce the side kick in this form. And again, the hand replacement shows up in there. So again, I don't know if there would be anything more specifically different that I would comment on in the third section other than the increased dynamism of playing with those attributes of, coordination, balance, timing, relaxation, et cetera, et cetera.